Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
All right, it's still Speak of Nigeria Radio, and as we promised, as we advertised, it's time for us now to do our country view on insecurity, and we have our first guest in the house, or more likely to say, our first analyst, and our first analyst is Dr. Hussein Abdul, Country Director, Nigeria at Plan International. He is a public intellectual, development and humanitarian specialist, activist and leader, passionate about social justice and committed to human and environmental development. He has extensive experience in international strategic leadership spanning over 23 years and currently is the Country Director of Plan International in Nigeria, and earlier was Country Director of ActionAid International. Doctor, I think I should stop here before your CV takes the entire program. Good morning, you're welcome to Spirit of Nigeria Radio.
Good morning, and thank you very much for having me. I'm wondering why you are reading the long CV. By the way, I'm out of Plan International since last week.
Wow! Still recent.
So I haven't updated probably by any that. That's why I should be doing that immediately. So thank you very much for having me.
Okay, so where are you now? Are you in between another assignment?
I'm currently Director of CARE International in Nigeria.
Okay, Director of CARE International in Nigeria. Okay, you're welcome. Okay, Doctor, let's start from the very beginning. In the last couple of years, Nigeria's security situation has degenerated. How did we get here? Are we in a state of war?
Yeah, absolutely, we are in a state of war, and we may probably be denying that reality. But it's a state of war because war sometimes presupposes that you have clearly defined contending or warring groups. But in this case, you may not have that, except in the northeast of the country, where we have been at war probably with Boko Haram for the past 12 years or so. But the situation you have in the rest of the country, in the northwest, north central, part of the southwest, and others, is a deep reflection of a deep worrying situation, but also of different manifestations. So it is not the same kind of violence that you are experiencing across, but you are, above all, experiencing violence that is leading to wanton destruction of life and properties. And now we are counting in thousands massive kidnapping taking place, especially in the northwest of the country. Sometimes Harda farmers complex in the central Nigerian area. Massive cases of banditry, cattle rustling, all involving lives and property. So it's been a terribly, terribly escalating trend that we have seen. I think this country has been deeply a violent conflict in the last 20 years. Of course, we can associate this with democracy, but we also know that a lot of things have opened up in the last 3 years. Immediately we transitioned to democracy. We had massive violent conflicts in Kaduna. We had after a number of years, we saw that violent conflicts in Plateau. We took more than 10 years, actually, of violent conflicts in Plateau State. We saw what happened in the Northeast and how we have been at war for 12 years at the moment. And we are seeing a new dimension of that in other parts of the country. And the Northwest, that was probably initially seen as impervious to this kind of situation, has today become much more deadlier, probably, than even what we are seeing in the Northeast.
Wow. Okay. I hear you loud and clear, and I'm very happy that I can go to town and say that Dr. Hussein Abdul says Nigeria is in a state of war.
Of course, on condition that you will add my caveat Yeah, you add my caveat to it. Yes, we are in the state of war in the Northeast. And then we are actually in the state of war in some part of the Northwest, particularly with the kind of violently raid of villages, the kind of arms that people actually have. Yes, but it is not. It's a war in the sense of the violence, but it's not a civil war that is very divisive war in that sense. So I hope my caveat will be properly taken.
Yes, your caveat has taken care of it. And I was just really joking. But let us look at what is the root cause of all of this? What is the root cause of all of this in your own assessment? From your vantage position where you see. How did we get here? I mean, what is the root cause of all of this?
I think the root cause is deep. And sometimes this is my worry about this country, that sometimes we don't spend time to analyze. We are actually carried away by sports of the moment. We can become very emotive, which is very understandable in a country that is so deeply historically divided like our own. We become very emotive and therefore don't look at the issues. For me, from where I sit and from the work I do, there's a strong relationship between the challenges of development that this country had experienced or have been experiencing since the 80s up to this moment. And then there is a whole element around state failure and the irresponsible character of the state at different levels. So there are different manifestations of the driving factor. There is no one factor to it. For instance, the crisis in the Northeast and the Northwest is deeply associated with the crisis of development in that region. Before the Boko Haram crisis, for instance, if you take the Northeast of the country, it's practically on the fringe of Nigeria. It actually has not been deeply mainstreamed in the Nigerian setting. On the fringe of practically everything, the fringe of the geography, the fringe of the politics, and the fringe of the economy. Look, take all the development indicators before the Boko Haram crisis. The Northeast was actually practically backward, the least in terms of literacy level and the level of enrollment in both primary and secondary school completion, the least in terms of health services indicators, the least in on nutrition and growth concerns. So practically take all of the development indicators, you find that. And so we have seen how crisis of development can create a state of humanitarian catastrophe. And so by the time you have extremist religious groups beginning to emerge, these poor and vulnerable young people became more susceptible to manipulation. I think sometimes people don't get it right. We're not saying that it is poverty that made them to carry arms, because there are poverty in different parts of the country. But the poverty, their exclusion, their lack of education, their poor political development and all that contributed to their vulnerability and susceptibility to manipulation, to religious and related manipulations, leading to them going to carry arms against the state. Similar situation can also be seen in the northwestern part of the country. Look, these regions were largely regions with different massive forests. So Nigerians are probably for the first time hearing about some of these forests, but probably some of them, unless if you are from that region, people are hearing about that forest for the first time during this crisis. And the size of this forest are actually bigger than some states in the country.
Wow.
And the sizes of the forests are bigger than some states, the geographical size of some states in the country. And many of those forest zones are actually on the fringes, and therefore they are ungoverned spaces, and they have become criminal dens over the years. And the history of these forests are not simply environmental. Yes, they have begun to serve environmental purposes at the particular time. But they were forests or areas that were carved by colonial authorities as part of population control and as actually management of people for them to be able to collect tax. So a lot of forest areas were carved on because in the savanna belt, people have, because the land is very flat and open in many places, so people settle more industry. There is no more clustering like you find in the forest area. So the settlements are dispersed. Villages are very far from each other. So the colonial authorities, as part of the process of controlling and managing people, they could decide to carve a whole area and say, we want to make this place a forest reserve, and therefore no farming, no settlement in that area, no hunting, and all that. Yes, they use environmental reasons to actually define that, but the truth about it is that they were also part of the process of controlling people. Along the line, in those periods, those forests were properly managed in the past. As the economic crisis, corruption increases, the forests were actually abandoned, and there was no proper control. They became more like major uncovered spaces in the country, and criminals hide in those areas. So there are complex mix of factors that shapes this. A lot of the people that are carrying these arms, poorly or never educated in any way. A lot of them have not seen schools. We saw the particular point that Nigerian government instituting what they call nomadic education, which was an education program that was supposed to support pastoralists or people who are on mobile trade and all that kind of thing. But corruption did not even allow the whole system to work. So a lot of these nomadics were never trained. They were never, so their livelihood was largely attached to this pastoralism. As insecurity increases, cattle rustling increases, environmental crisis increases, and even the nature, the effectiveness of even that kind of economic or farming system, a lot of them lost cattle, they do those things, and therefore, in one way or the other, communal conflict resulted to people begin to carry arms. And from there, we have seen this massive scale of criminality. It is not a justification. We are only trying to explain circumstances that inform and how we found ourselves in this kind of situation. We must recognize where we got to where we are for us to actually be able to find the right solution to the whole thing. But it's a very, very serious situation. It's scary. I think a lot of Nigerians don't really understand what we are going through. If Nigerians actually understand what this crisis is all about, they will even be more scared.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker of Nigeria Radio. And we are having our country review on the insecurity or security of the Nigerian nation. And our research person who is analyzing the security situation in Nigeria with us today is Dr. Hussein Abdul, who is the director at CARE International. Okay, Doctor, you made two striking points for me earlier when you spoke. You talked about this is a democracy, and so people have the right to express themselves. So I'm going to ask you two questions. One, this insecurity, especially in the North, is it some form of protest to all the things that you described? Secondly, now talking about democracy, let's forget, you know, the last tenure or no, the last administration. Now we have a president who has a military background, and that is not coming to play at all in stemming the tide of insecurity in the nation. What do you make of that?
Yeah, you know, I'm a believer in civic protest. And therefore, I wouldn't classify people carrying arms, wantonly destroying properties and killing people as protest in that sense. I believe in mass action. I believe in popular protest. But I don't really subscribe to people carrying arms and going into senseless killing of innocent people and in the name of protest. So I wouldn't categorize this as protest. I would rather categorize this as extreme criminality informed by crisis of our development and poor governance and governance failure. And therefore, because the state has failed to perform its responsibility, we saw things that are relatively small growing and escalating over the years and actually leading to where we are at the moment. Yes, we have a retired general, one who has fought the Civil War and all that. in the hem of affairs of the country. And yet what we are seeing is an escalation, not even reduction in any way. And I know those of us who follow this election, part of the reason why Buhari probably got elected in 2015 was that impression that it's a no-nonsense military, retired military general who probably understands the situation, because that was when Boko Haram bombs were flying in different parts of the country and all that, and people felt that he will come and will be able to tame the situation. Yet, despite what some of the occasional flares we see in the Northeast, we could say that the Boko Haram situation has significantly reduced. We are not, they've been restricted largely to the states of Borno, predominantly, partly to Yobe, and to some extent in the southern part, the northern part of Adamawa state. We are not seeing bombs in Kano, in Kaduna, in Abuja, and all those things. And are there, but the truth about it is that we are seeing other manifestation, other kinds of violent conflicts, almost with similar proportions or character in the Northeast, the North Central, occasional fly in the Southwest, the Southeast. So we have seen different forms of it, and this general is actually not able to tame it. Two dimensions to it. One is that him being the general, he said, for me, is part of the problems why we are not able to find this kind of solution, because the approach to it, in my sense, to this crisis is more a typically military kinetic approach, where security is largely seen from the military and policing perspective. And so we are always talking about more soldiers, more policemen, more soldiers, more policemen. Give us arms, give us war planes, give us... So this is the approach that we have seen. And this crisis, as important as kinetic power is to war situation or this kind of situation, but it is not the sole thing. We haven't gone out to have a more reflexive understanding of the dimensions of this violence and find a way to deal with it. In this country, we still see security, only people who wear uniform actually understand security. But in other part of the world, there are people who may never have seen any military training institution or policing institution, but they could actually have better understanding of the nature, the dynamics, the response, solution to insecurity than people who are trained. Because these ones are only trained to use arms, they are trained to gather intelligence, but they are not actually trained for environmental scanning. And so we are too restrictive in our understanding of national security advisor today, tomorrow chief of army staff. And when Nigerians begin to say, oh, let's change that team, we'll solve the problem. You know, so I have always said that. We are actually not analyzing the situation. And that is why we are finding it difficult to respond to this situation. And it is, we are not analyzing because we are still having the military and the policing approach to a major social, economic, and political insecurity dynamic. And we are not providing the response on the basis of that. And it's all about more arms, more police, more soldiers, and all that, more roadblocks. I know, that's what I think.
Well, so essentially, we lack a strategic approach to combating the insecurity that we have in the Nigerian nation.
Absolutely. And you know, the more it fails, the more the killings continue, the more we begin to quickly run back into our shares and our fault lines. And therefore, because it's a natural human reaction to problems. So fault lines become our ethnicity, our religion, our regional divisions. We begin to raise those things. And when you raise, the national temperature increases, and then when the national temperature increases, the state reaction become more rash reactions, doing something more symbolic that people we see here and there, and not dealing with the underlying factors and the realities that is confronting us. From where I think is a major, major concern, and I really worry that sometimes I feel like we don't even understand the problem.
Ooh, wow. I don't know where to move on to, but I said by the halfway mark we should be discussing some of the solutions, but you've already given some of the solutions, not in detail, but at least you've given a global, a helicopter view of what we need to do, which is basically to be strategic. Now, let me take you to something that I really cannot understand. We've got into a nation where 300 students can be kidnapped and led into the forest. And there are all sorts of, as far as I'm concerned, theater, drama. I see kids wearing brand new clothes, slippers, face masks, and they're presented before the public. We did not pay ransom, we paid ransom. But what do you make of all of this? It looks like some theater of the absurd.
Yes, theater of absurd, but it's explainable. You can really, really understand it if you understand the geography and the politics and the sociology of that region. I just need a quick description of the nature and the sizes of this forest. Nigeria has probably about 370 or so thousand police as a country. Half of that number is probably doing non-conventional policing work. And meaning they are following politicians, they are guarding some people's houses, they are carrying handbags of some people. Unconventional policing, or probably only about half of them are doing the conventional policing work. Once you pass the local government headquarters of many states, you don't see policemen anywhere.
Mm.
Once you pass the local government headquarters, you don't see. And a state like Zamfara, for instance, that's just the reality. That's the reality of it. So you can pass 300 from Jendabri, for instance, and take them through forest, not because people didn't see them moving, but because those who are leading them are deadly armed, and people have been badly intimidated over the years with occasional raids on villages, killing people who are sharing information.
And wow.
They've already, communities have been badly intimidated. Years of raid. This crisis I'm talking to you in Zamfara state is more than 10 years. One of the underreported crises, some of us who studied that crisis, we saw it growing from just cattle, from just armed robbery, quanta, like we call it in those days, from those quanta, all through becoming cattle rustling and to what we have today, a massive violence. So people, communities around those areas have been badly raided, villages, people killed in their tens and sometimes hundreds over the years. So they can move. Once they are moving, they knew that these are these people moving. And nobody do anything. Because you can't. Vigilante, they call them Ensakai. It's been a war situation between the vigilante groups in that area and this bandit. It's practically war. And sometimes even reflecting ethnic dimensions. Because the bulk of them of the Fulbe or Fulani extraction of the Bandi, and then some of the vigilante of the Hausa extraction, and sometimes you see some of those. So it's been a war situation that this community have lived in. So it is practically easy. You could pass through some of those forests and walk probably for an hour or two without even seeing any major settlements. You could do that. So for me, carrying those numbers and moving with them is not shocking. It's not, for a country like this, it shouldn't happen. It shouldn't be. It's a failure of security. It's a failure of intelligence. But looking at the geography and the sociology of that community, it is so easy for these people to do, for them to do that. And they have actually been kidnapping. It's just because these ones have been taken from a school, a formal institution, but villages have been taken. A whole village has been captured and kidnapped. 30 people, 40 people, 50 people from villages. And as I speak now, it's probably that is going on in some villages around that area. But this one, because it's a school, the school is a public institution, and therefore the world is bound to know. For me, the shocking part of it is that this mass kidnapping is becoming our new normal. The kind of shock that we experienced in the past when this happened is no longer happening. When the chibok happened, the entire world was shocked. The entire world was shocked. And not just Nigeria. When the second one happened in Dapchi, we saw the nature of the reaction. People said, no, not again. Not again. What has Nigeria learned? Why is this happening again? But all the subsequent happening, that element of shock is actually being lost. And so my own fear as a citizen is, it doesn't become our new normal. So, but the theater, the drama for me about assembling these children, taking them to government house, giving them new dresses, as far as I'm concerned, for me, it is the most irresponsible part of this drama, because it's unnecessary. What those children need at the point of release are serious psychosocial support. And one of the main dimensions of their psychosocial support is getting them closer to their parents. Take them back home, get them to their parents, get specialists to provide the psychosocial support. You don't provide better psychosocial support to a collection of people. You have to treat them individually, because people react to situations like differently. And therefore, the psychosocial support must be specific. It must be tailored to such individuals. And therefore, you keep them. Like, for instance, for 2 days, these children have not been able to see their parents. So the moment they are held, it's part of politics of patronage. Patronage distribution. A contractor emerges, and the contractor begins to show materials or show dresses for them. Quickly, it can be done. One of the major trades in northern Nigeria is tailoring. It's one of the major trades. Anybody who knows, because northern Nigeria has been a textile hub, and therefore tailoring is one of the major things. People actually sew calves in thousands. I grew up in that context, neighborhood.
And sometimes the clothes are even half sewn. They just join them together.
They just join them together and quickly bring them out. It's a contract for another person, for someone. So somebody benefiting from other people's misery and challenges. So for me, that is not what we need. You give them face mask, you assemble them in the government house. And what are you telling children who have been badly traumatized? What are you telling them? They've been badly traumatized. You are doing a ceremony around it. These are children from schools that as a governor you have not visited. You have never visited. 8 years, 4 years in power, 5 years in power. You've never visited. Those schools look abandoned, dilapidated, and all that. And then you are now packing them into an air-conditioned government conference room. And saying what? The immediate reaction to this is get experts to come and support, to provide the psychosocial support, get them much closer to their parents. Let the parents, whatever service you want to provide to them, provide that when they are in front of their parents and all that. And then, so for me, it's just an unacceptable reaction to an unacceptable situation.
Yeah, thank you very much, Dr. Hussein Abdul. He is the director of Care International in Nigeria as we speak, of Nigeria at Plug International. And I believe we've been having a very good conversation. It's still Street of Nigeria Radio. And we are about the halfway mark. Doctor, I'm going to take a break. I'll ask them to play a peace song, maybe something by Oyekai Wendo, or something that addresses what you're saying, so that we can catch our breath. However, when we come back, we will be looking at the international dimension, and you've touched on it a bit. No more shock, no more surprises, Nigeria. But we also remember that an American citizen was rescued somewhere up north, whether it's Chad, it's Nigeria, now there's a debate. But how, you know, is the international, you know, public looking at us? Also, we look at the regional dimension in Nigeria, the emergence of regional security apparatus in some of these states, Southwest South East, especially compared to what happened in OD during the days of General Obasanjo. And finally, we'll talk about the solutions. When we come back, it's still Spirit of Nigeria Radio. Let's take a breather. Let me sip my coffee. I've been enjoying myself with Dr. Hussein Abdul. Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
Afrobeat music, sounds from the African continent to the world. Listen to Afrobeat Sunday Jump on Spirit of Nigeria Radio. Sundays, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Nigeria time. Afrobeat Sunday Jump on Spirit of Nigeria Radio. The best of Afrobeat Nigeria. Afrobeat Nigeria at its best. Spirit of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed. Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.
All right, it's the Spirit of Nigeria Radio, and I believe that we can begin our conversation, the second half of our conversation with Dr. Hussein Abdul, Country Director International. All right, I think we've looked at the problem from the root cause. We've talked about civil protest, we've talked about the military kinetic approach we're using, which is not working. We talked about the national temperature, and of course, before we went to break, we talked about the theater of the absurd that is happening. All right, our conversation seems to have been skewed towards the north, understandably so, because that's where the crisis really is manifesting. But of course, we have in some other regions. Now, let's look at the cattle and herdsmen crisis, especially in the southwest. Some young leaders have emerged. And of course, the government has responded, the different governments are responding with regional security apparatus. What do you think about this? Is it a good response to the solution or to the problem?
You know, for me, these violent conflicts are mutually reinforcing. They are not totally independent of each other. The manifestations may be different. So you take the herders farmers conflict in the southwest or in the north central, the north central part, or even in part of the southeast, an occasional flare in the south, it is not independent of the situation in the northern part of the country. So there are two dimensions to it. One, as the north became insecure. As the north become insecure, particularly the northwest, because cattle come into this, down to the south from the northwest or the northeast part. So the northeast has been so difficult for cattle movement since the beginning of Boko Haram crisis. So the major route have been on the north central side. And we have seen massive cases of cattle rustling and the violent conflict. So what we now saw is a movement down in quest for a more secure pasture. Initially, when the insecurity started, the movement was down towards the north central. So you come down towards Kaduna, bordering with Plateau, part of Nasarawa State, and then Benue. And we saw in the last 5-6 years how this have resorted to violent conflict between herders and farmers in the region of Kaduna and the regions of Plateau down to Nasarawa and Benue. Then, because of that, we've seen a more increased movement towards the southwest. So as the movement increased towards the southwest, of course, a lot of them are in an unfamiliar terrain. And therefore, farms produce can easily be crushed and destroyed by cattle. And two is that as this destruction continues, there are no communal ways of managing them. because of the insecurity in the northern part where a lot of them are coming from, some of them are coming more armed than usual and therefore resorting into different kinds. There is a difference between the pastoralists or transhumans and the kidnappers. They are totally different. They may be of a particular ethnic extraction, and their ethnicity may coincide with the pastoral ethnicity, but they are not the same people. So it is not the same person who is running a cattle or round in, or is cattle round that the forest and the fringes in the southwest that is at the same time doing the kidnapping. So there may be a coincidence of harbors in probably some of them using their ethnic relationship to probably stay in settlements where these people who are doing their own, in quote, legitimate business are. But it's the people who are victims have no time to do these segregations and analysis. It's not our way of doing it in the northern part, sorry, in Nigeria. We don't do that. We just look at their ethnic group, and then we reach our conclusion. And so this is not really unusual. But when government refused to react, when government refused to
react... Sorry to butt in, doctor. I chuckled because I could make a correlation easily with when everybody that comes from Cross River or Akwa Ibom state is called a Calabar person.
Yes.
Meanwhile, little states at loggerheads, they don't see themselves as a state. But when you come to the southwest, everybody is Calabar, 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 Calabar. Meanwhile, there's a huge distinction among little couple of people. So I understand you perfectly, you know, that's why I chuckled. And incidentally, I'm married to Akwa Ibom, and they don't like to be called Calabar people. They are Ibibio people, they are Akwa Ibom people. You know, we have a way of generalizing, you know, in support of your argument. Please go ahead.
Yes. I have seen people, even me here during my youth service, I served, unfortunately, in the northern part of the country. I served in Niger State, unfortunately. So, with my camp, a lot of people will be from the southern part. I had wished to serve in the south, but I was, in those days, you don't easily change your posting. So I had
to
change. So, and then there were a lot of people from the southern part, especially in Niger, who were serving. But a lot of them were crossing the river Niger for the first time. And the assumption was anybody after the river.
You're correct.
So anyone of the river Niger is a Hausa person, and then we reach those quick conclusions. And you know, the truth about it is that nature abhors vacuum. So when there is no concrete state reaction to this issue, people will easily resort to self-help. And that's what we have seen in different parts, including the kind of manifestations we are seeing around the emergence of because there hasn't been a concrete state reaction to it, so a vacuum has been created, and that vacuum is we saw the emergence of several new heroes, and in that situation, because people are waiting for somebody or some institution to react, and then someone comes in, he can easily become the hero of such people. And that's the situation we've seen ourselves. I think for me, that crisis will happen in a country like Nigeria is almost given. It is a complex mix of sociological, political, economic challenges. So it's expected. But what is not expected is the reaction of the state to the situation. Like now, this crisis, as I'm trying to explain my understanding of it, there hasn't been a single state narrative the government has not been able to provide its own narrative of what the crisis is. So if you have different security institutions in the country have a different understanding of it, if you talk to 10 government officials, you may probably get 10 different explanations. There are 36 state governors. Probably if you speak to 36 of them, they will give you different narratives. So one of the major things in responding to conflict or crisis situation is that you must build a narrative. In fact, let people even disagree with your narrative. But there should be a shared narrative by the state, by government institutions, that this is, as far as the government is concerned, this is what the problem is, and this is our reaction. But as it is now, we don't have a shared narrative. So, and that is why different governors are responding to this situation even differently. And most of these governors, even the ones in the Southwest, were actually stampeded into that reaction because individuals and self-help groups are beginning to respond to the situation on their in their own way, and therefore they have to step in. They don't want to become unpopular. Because we're in a democracy where elections are coming and all that, and people will judge you by some of those things. And therefore, they got stampeded to react. And even when they are reacting, they have to react in a manner that is a bit close to the sentiment of their people. Because if they don't react in the manner that is close to the sentiment of their people, they lose popularity. So this is what is happening. And it's because the government has failed to provide an acceptable or a shared narrative that even the governors can and other people can actually work with in trying to find a solution to the case. And then to make the matter worse, again, the ethnic group that is seen to be behind this spate of violence also coincides with the ethnic group of the person who is in charge of the affairs of the country. And the way this country is run is that you can never be independent of your ethnic group, no matter how much you try.
That's true.
You can never be independent of your ethnic group. We have seen that with Obasanjo when he was in power. We saw all he did, but everything was practically associated with his ethnic group. We saw that with Goodluck Jonathan in terms of the Niger Delta. Even he makes statement, and then the statement is misinterpreted and seen to be, oh, there was a bomb in Abuja, and then somebody says the Niger Delta. And then he was more or less like saying it can be Niger Delta, meaning he's not saying it can't be the real agitators of Niger Delta. But up to today, the narrative out there is that he was supporting, he was exonerating his own people. So this happened. We can't be, no matter how much many of us try to be, to stand above those identity, ethnic and religion, you will think you are standing above it, but the next person interpreting you, reading you, listening to you, is actually associating you to. As you are talking, he's trying to find a connection. Whether you
and dragging you into it because you want to educate yourself.
Exactly. And dragging you into it. So now that coincidence is also not happy matter. The coincidence is not happy matter, and then when the government is quiet, is not providing the narrative, or it seems to be quiet, it's not reacting swiftly, or it seems to be challenged. So the people's because Nigerians actually believe that nothing is beyond government's control. That's how Nigerians feel. Nigerians don't also understand that government can get incapacitated. And I'm telling you here, with this nature of the crisis the country is experiencing, I beg to be contradicted by government. I feel the government is overwhelmed.
Wow. And
I honestly feel that the government is overwhelmed, the security agencies are overwhelmed, and it will help this country if they confess to being overwhelmed and galvanize this country, pull it together and say we need to collectively react to this situation.
Very good. On that note, let me ask you, so do we need international intervention, international support?
I don't actually think that there is any country that is beyond the need for solidarity and support. The nature of the support may differ. You may not need to have boots on the ground from America or from anywhere. But when you look at the international dimension of this crisis, you probably need support from your neighbors.
You
probably need more technological support from developed countries who have better technology to aid your intelligence gathering process. You probably need effect countries that are bothering you to effectively control their borders.
Yeah.
Because this crisis, another dimension of it is that it's not peculiar to Nigeria. It's actually a Sahelian crisis. This thing, as I'm speaking to you, it is what is going on in Mali. And in fact, in Mali, it even resulted to a collapse of a government. So this is what is going on in Mali. This is what is going on in Burkina Faso. This is what is going on in northern Senegal. This is what is going on in Niger. This is what is going on in Chad. And this is what is going on in the far north of Cameroon. So you are dealing with a regional crisis. It's a Sahelian crisis. And the manifestation is the same. It takes ethnic dimension in some cases, like we're seeing in Sudan, and we're seeing in part of Niger and part of Burkina Faso. So if we are dealing with that, what is ECOWAS doing as a body to support this country in terms of mobilizing collective actions across the region? You give an example of an American citizen who was rescued somewhere in Niger. Yeah, but probably it's not something I would love to discuss on air. But in a clear case, that person has probably a certain link which I don't want to disclose on air, and therefore it is easy to trace where he is, and therefore there can be a more strict reaction. America has bases close by, and from those bases, they are able to study the situation and link with it. One of the things Nigeria is failing to do, you see, intelligence is an expensive commodity.
Mm-hmm.
But Nigeria wants intelligence for free. So even Boko Haram, even bandits, they pay to get intelligence. Look, Americans everywhere, where they are involved, people, they pay to get their intelligence because sharing intelligence is risky. We have seen a whole village decimated, killed by militant element because I shared intelligence with security agencies.
So
if somebody is going to share that intelligence, he is sure that you are not capable of protecting him or her. So you need a different incentive. When we hear our police and the military saying, they are not even asking for intelligence. They are actually demanding for actionable intelligence. What is the meaning of that? Please give us actionable intelligence. So you are saying the person who is giving intelligence, he should filter his intelligence and give you the one that he considers actionable. What's that? That's your job.
That's your right. Job.
And they are demanding for it for free. Oh, people are not giving us intelligence. My friend, you go and get a way of getting intelligence. You buy intelligence. You have to invest in it. So you are not doing that. Nobody is sharing information.
That's absolutely correct. And I think on that one, you really nailed the solution to some of those problems, because I was going to ask you about the solutions, but of course you've already proposed, you know, the solutions as you are talking along. And the intelligence thing is very, very, very important. The strategic approach, you talked about military kinetic approach. And right now, you're still talking about intelligence, and government must invest in intelligence. Government must be willing to pay for it.
Government must be willing to pay for it. You must be willing to pay for it. There must be an incentive. There must be something that will encourage me more than my misery. That will encourage me to share intelligence. But I share intelligence with you, and at the next moment, somebody come and kill me.
That's the truth.
So there must be an incentive. There must be something. And that is not, we are actually not doing that. And then the nature of our military and the policing institution, I think we also need to bring certain level of flexibility in our recruitment processes. Yes, I understand people who are talking about decentralizing policing, community policing, yes, very important. People talking about state police, I don't have objection. I actually don't have objection to, I don't have objection to that. I think anything that we can do to decentralize our security management, because our security architecture at the moment is unwieldy. It is not a reflection of our reality. It does not reflect our crisis, our insecurity situation, and it does not reflect our federal character. And therefore, we need to have a better way of decentralizing our security. We
we don't want her, and I have to go at this point.
What?
I know that if you give me the opportunity, I know. And I've been jotting down like a student. I have two full scholarships, you know, of people who think this is done. So maybe I'll be in the position to present my own paper. We have an opportunity, and I'll be calling you according to Dr. Zoni Abdul. He's saying, can I go? And I'm happy that we're able to say some of these things in a very light mood, you know. And you put it in proper perspective, no sentiment, no ethnicity, and you've nailed it right at the doorstep of who you should be nailing. And on that note, I'd like to thank you very much. Dr. Hussein Abdul, Director of Care International in Nigeria. Give me a guarantee that you are a part of the State of Nigeria family. Anytime we want your opinion, your perspective on issues, you gladly oblige us. Say your hair.
I will gladly oblige you as long as I am not misquoted and I'm not.
No. This is recorded, so we'll play it. Yes, thank you very much. There were in Nigerians in diaspora, they've been keeping excited about all the things they are saying. And they are wondering why people like you are not put together in a room to come up with the solutions to some of those problems. You understand it. You understand it. And you have the intellectual capacity to drive it. Why do they exclude people like you?
Yeah, because we don't play politics. We do it the way
All right. No worries. People can do it the way it should be done. And on that note, thank you very much, Dr. Sina. And I think it's been a very good opener for us of this country with you on Street of Nigeria. Thank you very much. All right, this is Street of Nigeria Radio, keeping Nigerians in diaspora up to speed. Our transmission of the Insecurity Country Review Nigeria continues.
Of Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed.